It's the lowdown on Sports 1440 for Wolf GMC Buick. Truck month continues in April. 0% financing for up to 60 months on your new Sierra or $8,000 discounts. Visit wolfgmcbuick.com. Tutti Frutti by Little Richard. What a legendary artist. You know, back in the day, the beginning of rock and roll, somebody like Little Richard would write Tutti Frutti. It would become a hit on certain radio stations. And then somebody like Elvis Presley's manager, Colonel Tom Parker, would come along and say, we'd like to record that song with Mr. Presley, but he's going to get the writing rights on it and write the song. But when you got the writing rights, then you also got some royalties from that. Absolutely wrong morally, but it happened.
Yeah, like, did Elvis ever write his own song?
No, he never wrote a damn thing.
I swear he didn't. Like, and everything he ever did was a cover.
And no disrespect to Elvis Presley.
Still
but
a legend. But
stop putting your damn name on Little Richard's record. I mean, it happened before I was born, and I'm still mad about it.
I think they were friends, weren't they?
I don't know.
Or they knew it? I don't know.
Colonel Tom Parker was an ass. All right. We're now joined by our friend Bruce McCurdy from the Cult of Hockey at the Edmonton Journal. I bet you didn't think you were going to walk into that conversation, did you?
No, I didn't see it coming at all.
Well, that's the show, Bruce.
Is that my new theme song?
Yeah. Well, it's not exactly the sun, the moon, and the stars, but I'll take it. You know, I like the song. Bruce, I thought game one, there was three flub goals off skates and the Sherwood broke and all of that. But I thought artistically it was the kind of game that if you're an Oiler fan or observer of the team, you had to walk away going, well, they did a lot of things right. And that's not far from what you want to see again and again and again.
Yeah, they certainly did a lot of things right. I thought the start of the game was exceptionally good. First period, and then, you know, a little bit of a slide in the second that we've seen, 80 times this year. And but really surgically took control of the game again early in the third period and put doubt to rest, even as the final score was a little closer than maybe it should have been.
You watch a lot of hockey, and more importantly for our conversation, you remember a lot of hockey. That goal Leon scored early in the third period, the fifth goal of the game, I just don't know if you can shoot the puck any better or to a perfect spot. That was all world.
Yeah, there's an angle from behind the net that shows, you know, he had this little sliver. I mean, he could see, 4 inches? Between the two posts from the angle that he was shooting at. Wide enough for a puck. And he put it right into the roof of the net on, you know, just a laser. He's done it before. We've seen shots where he actually had both of his feet below the icing line and way off in the corner like that and still buried. I have a particularly fond memory of a goal he scored in Winnipeg last year where he had to put the net back on its moorings before going over there and beating Hellebuyck from, you know, similar spot. And so it's not a first, which is to say it's not a fluke. He knows how to do it. And in fact, I just posted a picture on Twitter from a schematic from my distant cousin, Micah Blake McCurdy, showing Dreisaitl's scoring area, and it's just way down low in the right corner. The further down, the more above average he gets, and it's just a super skill.
For the one person who follows me and not Bruce, I've retweeted that if you want to have a look at it. It is amazing. So I want to get to this because you are the voice of reason, and I think people need to hear it. Stuart Skinner was a big story a year ago. He was pulled in several games, and the goaltending was an issue. Are you seeing more of a calm presence in it? I know it's one game, but down the stretch and into last night's or the game the other night, where pucks were going in from Laredo and off of places, I felt that he had his composure. Are you seeing that, or am I making it up?
I am seeing that. And I know I don't think you're making it. I actually felt a huge sense of relief, Alan, in the last game of the regular season at Colorado when they showed him taking his place behind the bench for the second period, not because they pulled him but just how calm he looked after getting bombarded for four goals in that first period. And I thought, he does not look even one slightest bit rattled by that. This is good. And last game, I mean, the two late goals, I mean, that's just hockey gourds doing hockey gourd things. but he was excellent when it mattered. And the save he made off Arvidsson on the breakaway, 20 seconds before Oilers made it 3-0, that was a TSN turning point, if I'm allowed to say that on this station.
Yeah, you are.
that if Arvidsson puts that in there and it's 2-1 now, you know, game on, and he just got the tiniest little piece of his pad on that and kept it out. And, you know, that was a huge save when it mattered. Whether, you know, he stopped one in the last minute with a 3-goal lead is kind of irrelevant compared to the specific moments that happen within a game in their context.
Sherwood Park, Luke texts in at 833-401-1440. And forevermore, it'll be called Tutti Frutti O' Brucey. So so you know, Bruce, we're heading that direction. I talked at the beginning of the show today about the playoffs being a war of attrition. And for those who forgot, the LA Kings play at the very edge, and then they get in a car and they drive from the edge way past the edge. And we saw a low-cut play on Vincent Desharnais, the giant redwood. And then we also saw a slash on Hyman, and there's probably a lot of things that I didn't see, maybe that you did. This is why getting out to a 2-0 lead tonight, if it happens, especially considering everybody else is at 1-1, would be a massive deal for the Oilers, correct?
Well, yeah, it certainly would be. And the key word there is if. I mean, we saw Winnipeg and Vancouver fans sitting quite confident before last night's games, too, and now they're headed off to foreign soil with home ice advantage no longer in their hands. I mean, this is a massive game tonight. And 2-0 would indeed be a fantastic situation, but it's, you know, 60, potentially 60 plus minutes to determine that. So I'm not trying not to look ahead and just play the game in the moment, and hopefully the team will, I think they're mature enough now that they will do the same.
Yeah, I think, you know, here's the thing about hockey. You can play a great game, and the other team plays a really good game, and then luck can end that, whatever. They could lose tonight playing well. It is possible.
Yes.
But I had Dennis Bernstein on last hour, and he said something that really caught my ear. He said, kudos to Chris Knobloch and his staff. He had them very well prepared. The you know, going back, getting the puck, sending it to a good space, having the forward support. It seemed like they were really ready, and they had tweaked enough, certainly on the power play, where they were doing things that I had not seen before, and the power play lit up the Kings. I mean, it's right now, it's a major, major piece of the storyline in this series. Not that that didn't happen before. I'm not implying that. But it's interesting that the Oilers, who, quite frankly, they looked a little bit ragged on the power play and other areas down the stretch. They showed up with some new plays, some new moves, and that seemed to be a part and parcel of what they rolled out for the playoffs against Los Angeles on whatever night it was.
Yeah, Monday. And it was, they had four power plays. This is, let's remember, second-ranked penalty kill in the NHL, third-best team for goals against. And the Oilers had four power plays. On the first one, they had, I think, five shots on net, at least three of them very dangerous ones, couldn't score. And then the last three power plays, bang, 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 and they wound up 3-for-4 with 11 shots on net and I think it was 4 minutes and 50 seconds of power play time. And they just shredded the second best power play in the league. And that's got to be leaving LA with huge questions. It'll be interesting to see if how differently they might approach specifically the penalty kill tonight.
That dovetails to my next question, which is I was very interested in seeing the Deneau line up against McDavid. They got crushed at 5-on-5, Bruce. Mm-hmm. And Gavrikov Roy played, you know, not great, but we're better than Anderson Doughty, at least in terms of goal share, against McDavid. Dennis Bernstein said that he thought that they'd come back because of speed with Deneau against McDavid. PLD's in there. Do you see them doing the same thing, or do you see them checking down to Kopitar, or do you see it's going to be a lineup of Deneau against McDavid again?
Most likely. I think he's probably their best option, you know. And, I mean, he had a tough game one. His line, and that's a very good line historically, with Moore and Arvidsson, that's given all kinds of teams trouble. But, I mean, Dano, the last 2 years, 13 playoff games against the Oilers, he was on the ice at 5-on-5 for 4 goals against in 13 games, 1.22 goals against per 60. And then in game one, 3 goals against in, what, 12, 13 minutes of 5-on-5 play. And it just, you know, it was such a strange game from an L.A. perspective, particularly, you know, that's renowned for 1-3-1, locking things down. And yet in the end, we had, you know, such a high event game with 72 face-offs, 112 hits, 82 shots on net, 11 goals. I mean, this was insane in terms of high event hockey. And you have to think that the Kings, led by guys like Deneau, you know, brilliant two-way players like that, would be trying to tamp that down significantly tonight. And I, for one, expect a different game. Not necessarily a different outcome, but I think the game will be quite different.
Bruce, final one. I always like to get your perspective on historic moments. And the good thing is that Connor McDavid playing for the Oilers means there is an historic moment about every 28 minutes. And he got 5 assists in the playoff game the other night. And that, you know, it's been done before, but it doesn't happen often. And some of the names on the list are they're not super duper stars or all time greats, but they're all impressive hockey players. But it's just one more thing that he has done, that we have not seen. And I don't think we ever, you know, gloss over it or don't acknowledge it, but it really does point to the fact that he is in on so many, unique historic things in a year. Really does, as a group, sort of give us evidence of how special he is.
Yeah, well, he's the first player in this century to get 5 assists in the playoff game. The last guy to do it was in 98, ex-Oiler Jeff Cardinal. Of course, the great one did it a couple times in his career, including the first game at the Montreal Forum in the famous 1981 upset, where Guy Lafleur was supposedly going to put Gretzky in his hip pocket. Didn't quite work out that way. And then, less famously, but it should be famous, the night Gretzky broke Jean Béliveau's record for career playoff points, which they were tied at 176. Wayne had 6 assists in that game, which is the NHL record, tied with one other player. 6 assists in the playoff game. So it was another one of his things where he broke 2 completely independent records in the same game, which we saw several times over the course of his career. But McDavid is, in many respects, the modern Gretzky. Doesn't quite dominate to quite the same degree that the great one does, but I mean, the numbers that he's put up over the career, he's clearly the top offensive player of the current century, and you know, Edmonton fans again are doubly blessed that at any given night, I used to be afraid to miss a game because you never knew which one was going to be, you know, 10 points or 5 goals or what have you. And it's like that again now, that you know, at any time there could be just some kind of insane performance. And, you know, 5 assists in a playoff game is, you know, that's a pretty good night's work for sure.
It's true. And, you know, it's funny when you, I remember I used to work at the radio station in Red Deer, and my shift was 5 to 8. And I believe the ITV games on Wednesday started at 7:30. And I used to bet with my roommate, Ron Clark, what the score would be after because I'd get home and whoever was wrong or farthest away had to do the dishes. And I would say like 3-1. And sometimes I'd undershoot what the Oilers would do in the first period. They were that good.
Yeah, well, I'm older than you, so I remember the days when the games were joined in progress, and they'd come on. It used to be even an hour after puck drop, but then by the time I was watching in the early to mid '60s, half hour after puck drop, the TV broadcast, and we'd just be all pins and needles. What's the score? And sometimes they'd tell you it'd even be in progress as the broadcast started, and Bill Hewitt or Danny Gallivan would have to sort of intersplice, and the score is. But it was not very often 3-1, but if you'd done the same thing for the 80s Oilers, geez, it could have been anything, really.
Why didn't you just go on the internet, Bruce?
Well, you know, we did dial-up modem was real slow in those days.
Yeah, like about 10 years early for even the military. Bruce, thanks for this. Enjoy the game tonight. You're a gentleman. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Alan. You too. Have a great week.
All right. Bruce McCurdy from the Cult of Hockey of the Edmonton Journal. Lots there. You know, McCurdy, I don't have coffee with him as much as I'd like to, but I have coffee with him from time to time. And sometimes I wish that the people who listen to this show or listen to him or read me could be in on those conversations, because he is, it's like having a hockey Encyclopedia Britannica A to Z, or the entire internet at your fingertips, where you can talk about something. I could say, you know, when they traded Tim Foley for Chris Speier, and he would say, well, you know, Al, at the same time, Dal Maxfield was the shortstop at St. Louis, and he wasn't much of a hitter, but yada, yada, yada. McCurdy is like, I would never want to argue with him about history, because chances are I'm wrong and he's right. We love him, we appreciate him, and we're so thankful for him being our guest once every week. And if we can ever get everybody who's on the show as a guest in the studio one time, we will definitely have McCurdy, and that was called Declan's Law.
Do you know how much someone has to know about hockey for you to call them an encyclopedia?
No, he truly is.
Like, that is a compliment of the highest order.
But here's an example of that. I have this moment in my life that I will never forget, in which Jean Béliveau scored and killed the Bruins in 1969. And I'll go, oh, I remember that time Béliveau scored in overtime in the end of the Bruins season, and I was so disappointed. And he'll go, that was April 4th. And that's what he is. Might have been April 4th, 71, now that I think of it. Damn it, I got that wrong. Okay, on the way.
Should I get him back on the line?
No, okay. He's DMing me, don't worry. On the way, we'll talk about what you want to talk about, which is the Edmonton Oilers, a little bit of the NFL, and the NBA with Duncan and Declan before the top of the hour. Lowdown with Low Tide on Sports 1440. It's the Lowdown on Sports 1440. Brought to you by Wolf GMC Buick. Truck Month continues in April. It's all at wolfgmcbuick.com. I love that song. You do really well in the music department.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. Do you ever think, just, you know, speaking to our last conversation, that that intro right there is actually describing Bruce and not yourself?
Wait, isn't she lovely?
No. The bumper that played. It's like, you know, musical connoisseur, sports know-it-all.
Oh, I'm just probably, thinking, yeah, for sure.
Bruce McCurdy.
Well, Bruce and I differ in terms of like, he likes art rock. He and Jameson are like, I love Genesis, and I like Yes, and I like King Crimson, but only some of it. They're all over all of that. I like that, but then I also like Deep Purple and Alice Cooper and Bowie. Not that they don't, but they're deep into the art rock, you know, like they probably know all of the words to that Moody Blues song that goes, breathe deep.
Okay. Yeah. No, I get it. Yeah, you're painting a pretty good picture. I see where you're coming from.
But so it's like different, but they are extremely bright people. You know, I don't know where they land on the Alan Parsons Project.
Well, we'll have to ask. I have to ask Bruce in about 1 week and minus 20 minutes. There minus 6 minutes, actually.
San Jose Sharks have relieved David Quinn of his head coaching duties. David Quinn probably is saying, thank you. Like, they've got some older gents on that team that have stayed too long at the fair. And by that, I mean a long time. I happen to have the game sheet from April 15th, game 81, road game 80 for San Jose, game 80 for the Oilers, home game 41. Now, these are the veterans on the team. You tell me how many would make the Oilers.
I like this game. Okay.
Marc-Edvard Vlasic.
Yes.
He'd make the Oilers?
Yeah.
Where?
I'm not saying this iteration. Hold on. Are you saying, like, slot him onto the team right now?
Yes.
Or could be on the Oilers if the Oilers started from scratch?
No.
Okay. You're saying Because, like, there are legitimately some guys who I would not start if the Oilers were starting from scratch. You're saying put them on the team as the Oilers are right now. And
yeah,
could,
yeah, Vlasic is minus 22 and he's old as the hills.
Yeah, no, of course not. But I'm saying, like, if you're starting a roster from scratch, I would take him as, you know, a 6th, 7th defenseman.
Oh, sure. No, I'm talking about making
this
playoff team.
Oh, this game
team.
Just got a lot easier. Okay. Okay, go ahead.
Michael Granlund.
He might be the only one.
Klim Kostin.
I like Klim, but...
He apparently was in the crowd the other
night.
He was,
yeah. He was
wearing a jersey. I mean, Nico Sturm.
I like Nico too, but no.
Giovanni Smith.
Yeah, the no's are getting a little easier.
Yeah, and a lot of them are kids, and why would they get rid of the kids? I love... San Jose, to me, is a team I always want to see succeed because they're basically the Oakland Seals. But they are not good right now. And I'm sure that Mr. Quinn will go home and... like, take a long, deep breath and say, all right, for the next job, I want to coach a good team. I don't care where it is. It might be the neighborhood outdoor rink, but I'm going to coach a good team. I can't take it anymore. I believe that would be the way. Is Bruce related to Stauffer? No. No. I don't think... I know that they know each other, but I do not know... Mika Blake-McCurdy, who does brilliant work, and Bruce are related. Bruce did mention that. But I don't know. Maybe they are. I don't think they are. Hey, guys, we should have a conversation if Matthews or McDavid is better. Joe Idiot from TSN or Sportsnet. Is Matthews better than Hyman is the real question. Ha ha. I think it does a disservice to Auston Matthews, and I've said it all along, because then people start resenting him. It's no disrespect. I mean, Connor McDavid is a generational talent. And Auston Matthews is a great, great hockey player. I'll tell you a story. I always have a story. In the mid, I believe, 80s, might be wrong, might have been later than that, there was a young center fielder named Eric Davis who came up and starred and was brilliant for the Cincinnati Reds. He was a center fielder. He could run anything down. Triples turned into outs, and on the base paths, he was fast as lightning. He was tremendous with power and average at the plate. He was a five-tool guy, and people got very excited about Eric Davis. Some people started calling him the new Willie Mays. And Willie Mays met Eric Davis, and he said to Eric Davis, "Don't let them call you the next Willie Mays, because they'll punish you when you're not." Now, there's only one person on the planet who could say that without sounding like an egomaniac, and that's Willie Mays. But it was true. When Davis turned out to be something less than Willie Mays, people were critical of him. Ah, boy, he can't stay in the lineup. Oh, all that talent, he can't do it. Same thing happened to Cesar Cedeño 15 years earlier. And for Auston Matthews, it's unfair to him. He's not the same player. He has a lot of things that are strengths of his and his alone. Wonderful goal scorer. Terrific center. You know, a legit outscorer. Those are real things. He's a fantastic player. And comparing him to Connor McDavid is unfair. Just appreciate what he is. Toronto's very lucky to have Auston Matthews. Truly lucky. Arizona, truly unlucky. They should have been able to draft him, and they didn't. Well, I'm just reading one of the nicest things I've ever seen from Dean Clark, who just tweeted it. Said, "Listening to Low Tide on Sports 1440 reminds me why I got into radio back in the day and then out. In, entertaining and fun and wanted to replicate that type of show. Out, never had the talent to entertain and replicate." I'm sure that's not true. "Great radio, Al. Enjoy listening on a daily basis." That made my day. Why can't you say stuff like that to me?
Well, I was actually going to ask, did he mention me in there at all? Like, and Declan, you're doing a really good job too?
Was thinking Declan when he wrote Al, so don't worry.
He didn't
about
have
it.
Enough characters to
totally,
include. He's excited
totally
for the
Dunkin'
with Declan segment, is what it is.
Montana to Rice says, "I think it's fair to say he's a generational goal scorer. Look at the numbers, they're incredible. McDavid is better, but they're both amazing." That's true. That is absolutely true. The fact there's teams like San Jose and Chicago rostering the teams they do proves the NHL has too many franchises. Well, what do I know from Sean? I think 24 is the right number.
If you had 24 teams, would you still have 16 making the playoffs?
I've always thought it was too many.
Yeah, I just think 30 is such a perfect number for all the sports. Like NBA is 30. I think that's perfect. 32 works for the NFL, but I love 30 as a benchmark there. I think past 30, the talent really starts to dilute.
The NHL's always been weird. I mean, I'm not just saying that because it's, you know, something I want to say. It's true. They used to have six teams, four made the playoffs. And then during that time, and then even after that time, when the four made the playoffs, first place played third place, second place played fourth place. It makes no sense. It's the dumbest thing ever. And they did it for many years. The NHL does stuff like that. And then they used it. Then they went to 21 teams because Oakland mushed itself into the Minnesota North Stars. They didn't have 22. And so 16 teams still made it. And the 16th team during that period of time was so awful, they wanted to go home. They didn't want to get beaten up by Edmonton or Buffalo or Philly or Montreal or Boston.
So if it was a 24-team league, do you have 12 making the playoffs? So then you, this is such a moot point, actually. I don't know why I'm delving into this so much. But
I would. I'm not the person to talk to.
Yeah,
I'd have 8.
Well, speaking of the playoffs, as we look around the league tonight, Vegas, Dallas. May I pick your brain on a prediction
sure.
on what needs to happen? Because I was actually one of the few Edmontonians, I think, who watched that game. Or I didn't watch the whole game, but I watched a good portion of it. Because when the Oilers were up 4-1 on the Kings, I said, listen, I know how this ends. Like, the Oilers are so much better than the Kings. They're going to win this series in 4 or 5. I get what's happening here. The writing's on the wall. So I was watching the Vegas-Dallas game. I thought Dallas outplayed Vegas for 80% of what I saw, maybe 85-90.
Mm-hmm.
Vegas had like 4 goals on 15 shots. Obviously, you know, not great coming out of, you know, not great out of Ottinger. But I wonder, do you think that's sustainable? Do you think Vegas, like, I didn't give Vegas much of a shot in this series. Do you think Dallas can right the ship? Do you think Vegas is for real with Mark Stone back in the lineup? Like, where do you come out on that series?
I think Vegas is for real. I think it's going to be a long series. I do think Dallas will win tonight. And I don't know who's going to win it. But Ottinger has to be better.
Oh, way better.
But
he was Georgiev out there.
Right. But having said that, stuff happens in a series, and there's nothing you can do about it. You just have to live with it. But I would suggest to you that it'll go deep. I don't know who's going to win, but my suspicion is if Dallas doesn't win tonight, then I mean, I can't believe Vegas would get that lucky and be able to sweep Dallas and then rest, but well, maybe they will. I don't know.
I was going to ask you, if Vegas wins tonight, are you going to give the low tide stamp of over on that series? 2-0 on the road?
Maybe. I would have to mull.
I'd be shocked, man.
I'd have to mull and think and ponder. I ponder a lot. I yearn.
I'm telling you, if Dallas goes out, we're making the Stanley Cup final.
Well, I think the Oilers can beat Vegas. I've said that from the beginning.
Oh, Vegas for sure. I think I crush Vegas. Dallas is the one team I'm really worried about in the West.
Dallas is so good.
Well, that's what I thought too. But I mean, it's only one game. I'm not going to hyperfixate on it. But
did you say hyperfixate?
Hyperfixate.
Isn't fixate a word and hyper extend is a word? But is hyperfixate a word?
Man, I really thought it was. I'm getting put on the spot in a way.
Well, no,
I
I'm asking. It's not like I'm the Roger Thesaurus or the Webster's Dictionary.
It's more than possible I heard some iteration of those two words in close, you know, conjecture and just put them together in my mind as a made up compound word. I'm pretty sure it's a word or something. So I'm close. I'm like 97% there if I'm not all the way there.
All right.
But don't, like, yell at me about it next time. My good, no one would have noticed. I would have looked like a genius.
Oh, no, I call everything.
This is ridiculous.
You should call everything on me, too.
This is maybe the maddest I've ever been at you.
Low tide stories are like a warm hug from grandma, from Scott. Well, that's
yeah, like, get, come on now, stop it right now. Have man, imitation Tom, hyperfixation is a word. Like, what, come on. You think I was playing? Like, get out of here, man. I know what I'm doing. My goodness, heavy wears the crown. Stop this nonsense.
Well, the good thing is you take it well.
I want to use big words so badly, but I need to limit. I need to start just, you know, well, the and stuff.
I would suggest that a sign of intelligence is having a large vocabulary.
I will say I'm not an intelligent person by any stretch. I'm fully aware of that.
No,
I'm okay
you are
with that.
An intelligent person. Yeah,
I think it's overstated. But I've always had a better vocabulary than I think people have given me credit for. Not that anyone has ever sat there and thought about what is Declan's vocabulary. No one cares. But I think I've always had a pretty good vocabulary.
I will say this. This is a key point. We shouldn't override it. If somebody listening may not be aware of this. If you have a higher than average vocabulary, you're likely more intelligent than the average person. And I do think that countries should test people who are going to run for public office, especially the highest office in the country, for the size of the vocabulary. And I'm not even lying. Hmm. You have to reach a certain level.
But if you're going to test for the vocabulary, why not just go all the way with, you know, like an IQ test or something?
Or that they don't look into the sun?
Yeah, that was crazy.
All right, NBA. We're talking Duncan with Declan next. Lowdown with Low Tide on Sports 1440. It's the Lowdown on Sports 1440. Brought to you by Wolf GMC Buick. Truck Month continues in April. Check it out, wolfgmcbuick.com. If I ever pull anything on this show, it'll be moving around to that song. Man, that thing roars. You know, it's less cool because John Tesh wrote it. But other than that, it is pure, pure, wonderful music. Love it. And it's only my bias about John Tesh. He got to work with Mary Hart for a long time, so that's really good. All right, Duncan with Declan, what have we got?
Well, as you may know, the NBA playoffs are in full swing.
But it means a game every 11 years.
No, come on, they're playing daily. Like, they're doing it right, honestly.
When are the 76ers playing? Next Wednesday?
No, stop it. They're playing tomorrow. They're finally back at home against New York. They need some help. Now, I talked about the ending of last game a little bit. The two-minute report came out, and there were two missed calls against Tyrese Maxey and a missed timeout against Nick Nurse. Philadelphia is a team, as far as getting in as a play-in team, the Knicks are so far and away a favorable matchup, it's not even comparable to Boston. And Boston just matches up well with everybody. But I talked about this, like, if you're Philadelphia, how depleted you are right now being down 2-0. I know the first two games were on the road, but how depleted you are being down. And Jalen Brunson is playing terribly.
They lost by 10 points total.
I get it. The games have been close, but this is a team like Isaiah Hartenstein is the number one guy who's matching up with Joel Embiid, who's supposed to be one of the most dominant players in the league. And for all intents and purposes, is one of the most dominant players in the league. When he's not out there, what do you have? Do you have Mitchell Robinson coming off the bench? Do you have OG Anunoby, who's giving up 5 inches and 50 pounds? Like, you should have a matchup made in heaven every single time down the court. And again, they're not, like you said, they're not getting blown out. They're not, you know, Joel Embiid isn't putting up 15 points tonight. I get it. But you have a guy in Jalen Brunson who's supposed to be the superstar for this New York Knicks team who has not played very well this playoffs. The New York Knicks have had to get it from other areas. And not being able to capitalize on that, and I'm not even talking about going into games and losing them close on the back of missed ref calls or Nick Nurse not getting his timeout called. I'm talking about Joel Embiid not being able to dominate. And listen, I know he had a 34-point game when Maxey had 35. The rest of the team needs to step up. But it's a matchup you have to take advantage of, and you have not been able to do it so far. And that's what worries me about these Philadelphia 76ers.
So you say...
I think Philadelphia could still win this series, but it's, listen, now you have to go 4-1.
They've lost by 10 points total.
Yeah, listen, now you have to go 4-1 the next five games with three games at home. So it's not out of the realm of possibility, but it's a lot tougher. And you have to think Jalen Brunson is going to find his shooting stroke at some point, right? I'm going to jump back to some of the games last night all quickly. Right. Minnesota won to take a 2-0 lead over the Minnesota Timberwolves. And they kind of did it without, like, Anthony Edwards did not play well. He did not shoot the ball particularly well. It was a guy named Jaden McDaniels. I don't know how many people have heard of him, but I'm going to give a little bit of context here. Early in this season, maybe even preseason, there was a meme that was going around the NBA world where, you know, Anthony Edwards was talking about him in Minnesota versus the Phoenix Suns. And he had a quote that went incredibly viral, still gets tossed around to this day, saying, you know, they got KD, but we got Jaden McDaniels. Obviously, everyone laughed that off because they're not in the same stratosphere. Jaden McDaniels had 25 points and 8 boards and was 10 for 17 from the field last night. He led the team in scoring, while Anthony Edwards only had 15 points and was 3 for 12 from the field. And he actually played more minutes than Anthony Edwards, too. So this Minnesota team, I talked about the favorable matchup in the front court for them against this Phoenix team. I think they could probably have a favorable matchup moving forward against any team except the Nuggets, which would be the team they're playing in the second round, which makes it incredibly tough for them because Nikola Jokic just owns Rudy Gobert. they're not even in the same stratosphere when Nikola Jokic does to him offensively. But Minnesota, man, is a team that plays very well. And I still wouldn't be surprised if Phoenix won this series, because I think Phoenix has enough guys and enough talented scorers that they can make things happen. But Minnesota is playing a phenomenal brand of basketball. And like I said, they had Jaden McDaniels scoring 25 points. They have Naz Reid, who was a sixth man of the year finalist this year, and who, in my opinion, was one of the most underrated players in the league coming into this game. Things are rolling for Minnesota. And Minnesota's a team, like, even with Kevin Garnett, they were not a team that had a lot of playoff success. Like, yeah, he won an MVP and was one of the best players in the league, but there was not a whole lot going on in terms of postseason success for that franchise. I don't know if they're going to have it here. Obviously, a lot remains to be seen. It's only two games, but with Anthony Edwards as the cornerstone of that franchise, they're very much in the right direction. Pacers Bucks, man, listen, I talked about this. The Pacers are more than capable of winning the series. I said this after they lost 15
this
in game
this
one.
This is such an interesting series because of that. Because you're talking about, I mean, a really good team in Milwaukee.
Really good team. Now, Giannis is naturally out, right? It's on the back of Damian Lillard and on the back of a, like, definitely a weaker supporting cast. Jrue Holiday did a lot for that team defensively. Chris Middleton is long in the tooth, and Dame, you know, hasn't been in the playoffs for 2 years. He's made one conference finals in his entire career. So it's not like he, you know, he's been to the playoffs. He has experience there, but it's not like he's some, he doesn't have incredible championship acumen. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's a phenomenal player. You would like him to win a first round series against the sixth seed. But what I'm more impressed by this series is Pascal Siakam for Indiana.
Yeah.
Like, Pascal Siakam has, I saw a tweet yesterday that said Pascal Siakam has taken the keys from Tyrese Halliburton to this franchise in half a season. And I almost think that's, you know, apt. Like, the way Tyrese Halliburton was playing, incredible in-season tournament, incredible last year, great first half this season, fell off in the second half of this season. And there's kind of a notion going around about Tyrese Halliburton now that he chases assists a little bit. And you do see it when you watch him play. He starts to force passes. And, like, in the NBA, in the playoffs in the NBA, you just got to take the best shot available. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you're a good team. You're in the playoffs for a reason. You have players who can hit shots. You have to trust a guy. You have to trust yourself, and you have to take that first shot available. He seems to be a guy who's forcing passes. Well, Pascal Siakam, on the other hand, like, Pascal had 37 points last night because he was taking shots. He was getting to his spot. Like, he has borderline taken the keys to this franchise. This one's now tied up 1-1 going back to Indiana. I just don't know if, like, I was so torn on this series without Giannis. I went with Milwaukee anyway. Watching two games, I am so torn on if this Milwaukee team can win the series without Damian Lillard going nuclear. Because that's what it really takes for this team. Like I said, like, they don't have great supporting scores around them without Giannis out. And it's kind of similar to what I talked to about with Philadelphia and Tyrese Maxey. Philadelphia built so much of their offense on what Joel Embiid is able to do in that low post, right? That when he goes out and Tyrese Maxey has to run the offense, it's an entirely different system, and it's not a system the team is used to. Now, Damian Lillard is better than Tyrese Maxey and has had more experience handling the ball in high-pressure situations and for long points in his career, but when he's forced to, it's still the same general idea, right? When Giannis is out, the dynamic around the team and the offense around the team changes. So I'm very interested to see how the rest of that series goes. I'm really looking forward to it. That is a game, like, it's not the most glamorous, right? No Giannis is there. Indiana's kind of, they don't have a LeBron James or a Kevin Durant, although, like I said, Tyrese and Pascal are very good. But it's kind of a, it's a bit of a ho-hum series, I think, in, you know, in principle. But it's, I'm very excited to see how the rest of those go. One more.
Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to say one more game I want to get to from yesterday. Mavs even up the series with the Clippers. Luka Doncic, I mean, it just, he's going to have to do it, right? Like, you know, 32-9 last night, 32 of the team's 96 points. Like, Luka Doncic is so good. In my opinion, he's one of the three best players in the world. It must be so frustrating sometimes to be Luka Doncic's teammate. And I give Luka Doncic credit because Luka Doncic, like, when Jalen Brunson left the Mavs, he was averaging 16 points a game. He went to New York, became a superstar, and people kind of started to say, hold on, like, Luka's great, we know this, but is he holding some of his teammates back? Now, I don't think there's a Jalen Brunson on that Dallas roster right now, and I'm not talking about Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving's established. I don't think there's a guy who's putting up 14 points a game who can become a Jalen Brunson. type of player, but it still must be so frustrating to be on that Dallas team because you have to watch him dominate the ball for 20 seconds every shot clock and then either put up a crazy shot, which, you know, a lot of the times he hits, or he kicks it out to you with 2 seconds left on the shot clock and you're forced to hoist. Also, the way he dominates the ball so much at the top of the key, it slows your offense down. Like, you generally run an 8 second set in the half court or something, and by the time you've ran through your offensive set, Luka hasn't done anything, and then the defense is established. So Luka is a phenomenal player. He's one of the best three players in the league. He's going to have to win this series on himself, and that's kind of on his own volition and how he's built his game. I'm also excited to see how that series is going to go. James Harden was he's fine. Paul George needs to show up more. Kawhi needs to get healthy. The Clippers are a better team, but Luka is good enough to win a series on his own. I'm very excited to see how that one plays out.
Are you still in the Nuggets have been interesting, but is this Boston? Is this Boston's to lose?
Listen, I'll make this quick because I know we got to get to the outro in about 3 minutes here. If Boston doesn't at least get to the finals, it is like Joe Mazzulla is a good coach. I think he's a good coach. He took over for Ime Udoka when he left with his problems with his wife, Nia Long. I think he's a good coach. An NBA analyst I really, really respect went on air and said that if the Celtics don't make the finals, Joe Mazzulla should be fired.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a 64-win team this year. But you look at this path. Like, first of all, you're playing Miami without Jimmy Butler and Terry Rozier. The other teams in the NBA, or the other teams in the East who could give you trouble, Giannis is playing, Milwaukee is playing without Giannis. Joel is playing banged up and with, you know, all the painkillers in the world pumping through his body for Philly. Orlando and Cleveland, credit to them for getting to where they've got to, but they're just not there, Orlando especially. You have to make the finals if you're Boston, and I fully expect them to, don't get me wrong. But if they don't, it would be one of the most fraudulent occurrences of a regular season team I've seen in a long time, maybe in at least the past 10 years of myself watching basketball. Well, I do think they do it, though, to end my point.
Yeah, it'll be. It's been a
great playoffs, though, man.
In my lifetime, Celtics, Lakers, you know, those are still the marquee for me.
Yep.
Team. So the Celtics being good and the Lakers being good, all is right with the world.
You know, I obviously grew. I'm a little bit younger, and I really grew up with the Spurs dynasty, just being such a like the Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili.
I love that team because they were so well coached and they were well managed, and they didn't do any stupid stuff.
And they were like they had 60 win seasons out the wazoo for longer than I could even begin to.
They always
count on a calendar.
They did free agency right. They did everything right. They were perfect. Yeah.
So to see them being where they are right now, obviously they have Victor Wembanyama. Like some franchises just have it all. Them getting Victor Wembanyama yeah. after David Robinson and Tim Duncan with Greg Popovich as a coach. But it's still very strange to see them as a bottom barrel team because they were so good and they were the epitome of success for so long.
They won't be for long. I don't know. Some organizations get it. They just do.
Just they have it all, and San Antonio is absolutely one of them.
It's like Sam Pollock decided to take up basketball and get reincarnated, and that's where he landed. Okay, loved today. Really enjoyed it. Tomorrow, can I say it or have we confirmed?
We have not confirmed, but I think you should go ahead and say it.
Well, I don't want to promise and then because I always under-promise and under-deliver. We have a very special guest we're thrilled to have. Hopefully, we'll have him on tomorrow. That's all I'll say. Jason Greger on the way next. Please enjoy your day. And say hi to Declan if you see him at the Slurpee aisle.
Teach me some words if you get the chance.
Apparently you were right. That is a word.
Oh, come on. Don't even play with... But I use conjecture in the wrong context.
I'm so
as Adam
dumb.
Pointed out, and I appreciate it for that.
D-U-M-E, dumb.